Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for hosting me again, giving me an opportunity to share some debate Torah, a few thoughts, the privilege of being able to share some debate Torah is always something to be appreciated. I'd like to share today a shaila that I saw in a contemporary sefer, Shaila of Tshuva Sheiros Avrom. It's not a common sefer, but he brings down a discussion, a shaila, which in various forms is related to many practical instances, some of which are live and ongoing. So I'm not going to disclose how they are relevant to the practical questions, because I don't want to give away identities or any ideas of taking sides to any particular shaylos, but discuss it. I'd like to follow his analysis and the way he distills the question, breaks it down, and idea of how approaching the shaylos. So I'll bring it the way he brings it down. It's a little bit long-winded, but it will help us get to where you want to get to. So the way he brings it down there is in the Sheiros Avrom. It's in, if anyone gets hold of the sefer, it's in Chedek Beis Choresh Mishpat Siman Aleph. He brings it down. He's still talking about a jurisdiction, presumably Switzerland, where a foreign resident is not entitled to hold residential property. He cannot be an owner of property. So it's not uncommon if someone wants to invest in a property in Switzerland, he finds someone who is a Swiss resident, and he registers the property in the title in the land registry in Switzerland under that gentleman's name, and really he is the true beneficiary, and he's the true owner, and he suffers all the liabilities, and he gains all the profits. Now, but here I am, and this gentleman decides he wants to sell it on, and the person he's selling it on to, the one who owns the property,
the foreigner.
He wants to sell on the property, and he's found another foreigner as a buyer. So the fellow who's going to buy it off him says, "You know, we'll just keep the same arrangement as it is. We'll have it still registered under that fellow. Presumably, he's receiving a fee for his services of having it registered under his name. We'll keep it under his name. We'll make a sale between us, and from now on, the property will be mine." But essentially, as far as the land registry is concerned, nothing's changed. As far as the management is, we can keep the same management. Everything will stay the same as it is. The only thing, the difference is that the rental income, or whatever it is, the income and the cost, are now the foreigners.
What's the loan
now? Let's make it simple. For our purposes, it's not relevant whether it was. Let's say it wasn't. Yeah. No, let's not get into Ribis questions. Yeah, there's a Hesed Iska, whatever. It's done in a way there's no Ribis issues. Fine. But the question arose, what happened was, at a later date, the second fellow went and he sold the property, a proper legal sale. He went and sold the property to a Swiss resident, and the title now changed. In doing so, that incurred a liability of a capital gains tax. Because what happened, the property was bought originally for price A, and then it was sold for price B. So the profit in between, the difference, is subject to capital gains tax. Says the buyer number two who sold the property, this capital gains tax, part of it is suffered as the increase in the capital value of when owner number one owned the property. He owned it for 5 years, and then I owned it for another 5 years. In the first 5 years, it went up X. In the second 5 years, it went up Y. And now, the capital gains is being charged on X and Y, because when the first sale went through between the two foreigners, it was never registered, it was never calculated, and it was never taken into account. And therefore, says the second one to the first fellow, "I want to pass on the liability of that time period, of the capital gains of that time period, to yourself." And that's the way he presents it. And obviously, if one looks at this question, we can break it down to saying what happens if somebody sells an item or a property to somebody else, and there is an existing liability on it, there is some sort of charge or some sort of liability at the time of the sale where the person buying it was unaware. What happens to that? How do you analyze that? And what's the framework or the structure for tackling this question? That if somebody sells an item to somebody else and there's an existing liability or a charge on this item being sold, and the person buying it was unaware of that, what is the halachic guidance for such a situation? So in the Shalas Chuvas Sheis Avrom, he refers you to a Siman Shulchan Aruch. So take a look at the Siman Shulchan Aruch, Siman Reish Chof Hei. Chosh Mishra Reish Chof Hei deals with the discussion of somebody selling property. The Shulchan Aruch actually says it's property, metaltalin, or avodim. Three different categories, in fact, and each one have their own rules and guidelines, which we're not going to go into right now. But be that as it may, the Siman Shulchan Aruch there is discussing the achrayus that the seller is responsible. So what happens? Somebody sells an item, and then it turns out there was a charge on this property. And the person who bought the property is now faced with having to release the property to a creditor of the vendor. The vendor said the vendor sold them a property, the vendor had debts, and this property had a charge on it, and now the person who, the creditor who has a claim on him, secures, reclaims his loan by recovering this property that he has a charge on. So the Shulchan Aruch there says that the seller is responsible, he has achrayus, and the achrayus, we say, is tor sofer. That means, even if it wasn't specified at the time of sale that the vendor is responsible for this, achrayus tor sofer, we assume, unless it was specified specifically to the contrary, unless the person says, I'm exempt from any liability that is going to incur to you as a result of charges on myself, charges arising on myself, we assume that the person has taken on the liability, the achrayus, of the sale. Therefore, if the buyer loses the property as a result of the seller, the seller is responsible to reimburse him. As Sif Aleph, Sif Beis, Bamed Varam Amurim, it's not so straightforward. Bamed Varam Amurim, Dafka, if this was taken away from him, Bedine Yisrael. But if it was, and now these are the critical words, if it was Bedin Hamelech, or Bar Koy Shalgoyim, then the seller isn't responsible. So, Akoyish Shalgoyim, the Mephoshim say, relates to procedural matters. That we don't know that they were entitled to claim it. They accept evidence, perhaps, that we wouldn't consider valid forms of evidence. We don't know that the din they did was correct. But the din ha-melech, what's the din ha-melech? Why is the din ha-melech, something which was taken away from the din ha-melech, why is that excluded from this halacha of achrayus tor sofer? So the Pischei Tshuva on that Sif in Shulchan Aruch, he brings down a Beis Ephraim. A Beis Ephraim tackles this issue. And he wants to know, if there's a din ha-melech, that a property can't be sold, or if it's sold, X happens to it, Y happens to it. So why would that not have a bearing on the sale? The person was unaware, this property can't be sold, there's a legality, there's a legal problem with it. You sold the property, the buyer was unaware. Mekach tois, what's going on here? So the Beis Ephraim, he says, he categorizes it into three different categories. And he says as follows. So sometimes you have a din ha-melech, you have a legal problem, which is some sort of legal system, which says this property or this item cannot be sold for whatever reason or another. In which case, the selling of it is invalid from the onset. The whole sale is not a sale. So in halacha, even in the halacha, in the classic case of achrayus, there's two categories. Someone stole an item which wasn't his, and he goes and sells it. That's one form of achrayus of the seller. There's another form of achrayus, is the person sold an item, he had the debt, and the creditor came and collected it. Achrayus on the seller. But they're two very distinct cases. Why? Because when you steal an item and you sell it, it's not your item. The item was never sold. You took something that's not yours, you don't own it. You can't sell an item that's not yours. So the gezula, the whole item, the whole sale is invalidated from the onset. It's not a sale. There's no sale going on here. You sold something that's not yours. What do you mean you sold something that's not yours? That's not sold. It belongs to the person who has the item is originally. You sold an item, but you had the debt. There was a charge on the property. Okay? So it was your property. The charge might never be collected. The sale could be a wonderful sale. It could last. What happens one day the creditor comes along and says, yeah, I've got a charge on this property. I'm repossessing this property. Oh, okay. No. You can do it. Does that invalidate the sale? Doesn't invalidate the sale. There's a halacha. Achrayus is on the seller. The seller is responsible to reimburse. He's taken on that responsibility. Pashas, that's not a mechatos, but either way, it's a very different case, a very different category to the category of a Sodeh Gezula. So the Beis Avraham says, when we're dealing with Din HaMelech, that's the first thing we have to analyze. According to the legal framework that the property was sold in, could this property be sold? If this item can't be sold, and he sold an item which cannot be sold, then it's certainly a mekach tois, the item was never sold.
It's got a charge
on it. Okay. If, that's the second category, there's a choif. There's a choif, the person who sold it owes money, and it's a debt that essentially he could repay. But the debt affects the sale of the property, so then that would fall into the category of the sugya of achrayus. Is he responsible as achrayus? That means the property could be sold, the property had a charge on it, it could be collected, it might be collected, but if the property is repossessed, then there will be a claim as achrayus, the sefer shor achrayus. And don't come along and say to me, says the Beis Ephraim, that the Shulchan Aruch says that the whole sugya of achrayus is excluded when it's din hamelech. The Sif Bey says, "Bamed v'ramurim b'dinei yisrov not din hamelech." So no, that's not talking about this type of case. That's talking about a case where a person owed money, he sold his property, and then after the sale, new laws were introduced. A new law was now introduced, and previously this type of debt could never have been collected from this property. And now the new legislation has been introduced, which entitles him to make a claim on this property. And not only can you claim against him personally, you can claim against his assets as well. And now the person loses the property as a result of a new law which was introduced. Says that is what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about. When the Shulchan Aruch says a din hamelech is excluded, says it's talking about a law which wasn't in place, a debt which could not be claimed against the property at the time of the sale. Says the sale, the vendor takes responsibility for the sale. But you can't expect him to take responsibility to the extent that if new laws get introduced, he's responsible for that as well. That, says Beis Ephraim, that's what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about. Says the Sheiris Avrom. Now, let's go back and analyze the question of the property sale in Switzerland. Says, well, the first category of the Beis Ephraim. First category of Beis Ephraim is someone who sold something which Bechlal can't be sold. That doesn't apply because he sold the property, and this, well, as far as, let's talk about the capital gains tax point of view, that is not something which prevents the sale of the property. L'chayra, he says, this should fall into the second category of the Beis Ephraim. Somebody who has a debt, and the debt affects the property in a way that it could be repossessed. So he says, no, the big distinction to be made here, and that is as follows. So the Beis Ephraim is talking about, at the time of the sale, a person has a debt. The vendor owes money. He has creditors. And there's a possibility that that debt will be claimed, will be called back through these properties. And eventually it happened. Or at least attempted to. And says the Beis Ephraim, we consider that to fall into the category of Achrayas. In our discussion, in this question, this halakhic question, the debt at the time of the sale, when the first person sold the second one, there was no debt. There may have been a potential debt. That means, had we declared it the way it should have been declared, then there may have been a tax calculation. We may have had to file a capital gains calculation. Now, you're coming along, you're saying, 10 years have gone by. 5 years was your ownership. And 5 years was my ownership. So let's split the capital gains over those 5 years. Who says there ever would have been a liability? Properties might have gone down. You might have sold it to somebody else on the same terms that we sold it. Is it clear that there was a liability at the time of the sale? The whole debt is a potential debt at the time of the first sale. There was no existing debt at the time of the sale. You're now saying, well, I'm suffering as a result, when I sell the property, of the increase in capital value of the time that you owned it. That may be true. But it does not mean there was an existing debt, a liability, which I passed on to you. So therefore, he says that the Beis Ephraim's second category isn't relevant here either. There is a point, I think, it could be taken a stage further, and I think he doesn't take it that far, he feels not necessary to go so far, but I think there is a further point, and that is, in the case of the Beis Ephraim, there's actually a charge on the property. The properties are collateral for the debt that the person owes. In this case, of the capital gains property, I sold you a property, there's no charge against the property. No one's ever going to claim the capital gains from the second person's property because the first person owed money. There's not a charge the first person owed on the property. He may owe money, but it's not something that they're going to be clawed back from because of the first. It's not against the property at all. So it's not really relevant to the case of Achrayas. But
even the sale of the property causes the capital gain.
Yeah, that's the question. It's causative. It's a causative effect. But it's not the same as the case of the Beis Ephraim. It's a causative effect, but it's not the same where the property was collateral for that debt. Then there is there's another sif there as well that one can make. One can make a contractual agreement. One can either increase the level of Achrayas or decrease the level of Achrayas by agreement. So the Sheir Zavron proposes that in his particular case, let's look at the contract of sale between the two parties. And the initial reading of the contract is that the second person takes on all the liabilities of the first person, but he then discards that because in the context of that particular contract, it was referring to the arrangement that was in place between the registered landowner and the true owner and the beneficial owner. I mean, there's a registered landowner, and the real owner obviously want to cover themselves. They're obviously in a position of tension because the first person, the registered owner, may suffer debts, claims made against him as a result of this property, and the first owner may. The real owner may also suffer because he's exposed himself to an element of risk of the true and registered owner may have other business dealings which might affect this property. So they make an agreement between themselves that the first owner, the true owner the registered owner and the beneficial owner, each one will indemnify the other for their responsibilities. So the first owner says, I'm responsible to the registered owner in case anything goes wrong as a result of my behalf. And those liabilities are what the second owner took on. But he wasn't taking on external liabilities of the capital gains tax. Okay.
It was in the first agreement.
Beg your pardon?
It was in the first agreement.
It was in the first agreement between the
registered owner and the real owner.
True, had an agreement between them.
The agreement was, if it will be capital gain, then the
Right, so that means his responsibility to the registered owner. So that means I'm taking on your responsibility to the registered owner. But between the first two people, who's responsible for the capital gains of the first 5 years? That owner one owned it, and then owner two sold it, and now 5 years later, the contract wasn't referring to between you and me. It was referring to between you and the real owner. I now become the one who's going to deal with the real owner, the registered owner. So that's between him. That means the beneficial owner can say to the second fellow, you have to sort it out. Yeah, you don't come to me. But what about the first beneficial owner going to the second guy? That Heskin between them wasn't specified in the contract.
The owner, which is registered in the property,
yes,
didn't sign the papers.
Yes.
Until all the capital gains.
Yes, 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 yes. There's no claim against him. That's for sure. The registered owner, for sure, no claim. The whole dispute is between the beneficial owner number one and beneficial owner number two, and their contract didn't specify what's going to happen to this detail as regards their dispute. It said that he's going to take over anything between person number two and the registered owner. That's what on Ransford. But, he says, there is another factor to consider. And that is the impact on the price. That means a person sells a property or an item. If there's a charge on this item, that will affect the sale value of the property or the sale value of the item. That means, had I been aware that this was a situation, I would never have paid so much for this property. So now, again, this can work in one of two ways. This can work to invalidate a sale and say, it's clear that I will never have bought the property on these terms had I known that it was... Oh, no, it's not clear. You may not have bought the property on these terms, but the fact is, you overpaid. That's dinoino. And it comes to a nobekakois. Ain't no bekakois, unless the Ramah paskens admechzo, double. So, what comes out of this truth shaitan? Where are we going with all of this? We're going with all of this as follows. When you're in such a situation, there are three possible heads of claim. One head of claim is from the sugya of Achrayas. The sugya of Achrayas, selling a property either which isn't yours or has an existing debt, may be relevant, depending on the situation. There's another situation, another head of claim, which will be based on difference in the price value, the price value has been affected, and there'll be a third head of claim based on the contractual arrangement between them. So that's the framework that he presents, and the Chayra, when these cases arise, that's the practical, that's the way of tackling and approaching them, to see which category does it follow into, and the principles will vary depending on the way each case was structured, the way each, what exactly we're talking about, what debt we're talking about, and how was it, and how does it affect the actual item. So that was the shayla that I saw, and that was what I took out of it. Let's finish off something that maybe you can take home and say on the Pasha. Pasha's Korach always presents a challenge. Korach, we're told, we know it's a Pasha which talks about, obviously, a dispute between Korach and Moshe. And obviously, we're taught early from ready age that we can't really relate to it in the concepts that we relate to disagreements. But on the other hand, we're taught the Pasha of Korach. Obviously, we're expected to take things out of it, take out limudim, which we can apply to our own lives. And this idea is summed up, I think, very well by a vort, which I saw from Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Rav Lechem Bnei Levi. Actually, I want to start with the pasuk beforehand. A vort that I saw in Beis Pinchas. The opening pasuk is Vayikach Korach. Ben Yitzchak, Ben Kos, Ben Levi. So Rashi says, doesn't mention Yaakov, why not? Yaakov davened, b'kol amateichel kvoidi, don't mention my name when it comes to Machlokes Korach. So Pesach says, what's going on here? He says, I'm Ben Levi, don't mention Pinchas, this is what's going on. He says, what did Korach want? Rashi says, he was this kind of, and this Yossi, Elitzof, and Shalazil, should have made me the Nossi, why did you make Elitzof, Ben Uzil, the Nossi, why did you make me the Nossi? He says, it's a... So a bit of gazach, come along. Say, why didn't you make me? Even if you feel that way, but come along and say, why didn't you make me? People embarrassed to say such a thing. Says that. Very often, the Yetzer Hara gets a person. He says, yeah, it's not about you. It's your family. It's your parents, your grandparents. Says, Kerr comes along and says, how can you? It's not me. It's Ben Yitzhak, my father. As Rashi says, there are four brothers. Okay, fine. Amram was oldest. Yitzhak was the second oldest. Ben Yitzhak, Ben Kahos, Ben Levi. So Rashi says the Beis Pinchas, that was Yaakov's tefillah. Bikolom al teichat kevoidi. Don't bring my covered into your machlokes. Yeah, and don't say it's after the covered Yaakov. Fine. Adkan. That was the tefillah of Yaakov Avinu. Says Rav Chaim Shulevitz, Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, "Rav lechem b'nei Levi." Says the Gemara in Soita, "Barav biseir, barav bisru." He used lashon Rav lechem b'nei Levi when it came Moshe Rabbeinu's time. What was said to him, "Rav loch al teisef." Pashas v'aschan. Moshe Rabbeinu is damning to go out of Israel. So Rav loch. Rachel said to him, "Don't daven anymore." Says, "What's going on here?" Barav biseir, barav bisru. He said Rav lechem b'nei Levi, and he says to him, "Rav loch, what's going on? It's an einish. He did Moshe Rabbeinu did something wrong." Says Rav Chaim Shulevitz that Korach, noisei aron. Korach, he wanted a higher position. He thought that he wanted to achieve more. He thought if he has a higher position, he could achieve more, he could reach a higher level in the Ruchnius, he could do more if he was had a higher position. And he thought if he would be the one in the position, he would be the one most suitable to do that. Now, boss, the wrong way to do it. So, what was his problem? His problem was he went about it the wrong way. But essentially, what he wanted more, he wanted to achieve more. He was ambitious, and he wanted to do more, he wants a higher level in Ruchnius. So, someone comes along and wants to achieve more, and he wants to do more Ruchnius, the answer isn't, "Rav lochem, you have enough. You're a bnei Levi, that's enough for you." That's not the answer. Don't say you have enough. You can never have enough when it comes to Ruchnius. What then? You tell them, "Listen, this is not the right way to do it. This is not the way to go about making a machlekes. This is not for you. This is your role. Fine. There are ways. You can register your complaint, but this is not the way to do it." What happened when Moshe Rabbeinu wants to come to Eretz Yisrael? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu want to go to Eretz Yisrael? Says the Gemara. V'chi lecho mepiyo utzorich. V'chi nisboya mituva utzorich. Elo yesh haba mitzvah sheyesh lekayimon b'chutzlaretz. Moshe Rabbeinu says, "I want to go into Eretz Yisrael." Says the Chaim Shulevitz, that was the Rav Loch Rav Bisei. The truth was, if you could understand, there's a situation where you can say Rav Lochem is enough in Ruchnius, that this is the situation, this is you have to accept, it's enough. But Rav Loch, don't come with a taina. No, there's mitzvahs that want to come in. No, Rav Loch, that's not the role, and therefore you have to accept that. Just finish off with one vote. There's two different clocks here. I'm not sure which ones are. Huh? Say two different volts? I've got half a minute left, I think. Yeah? So, see. I just take out one volt. The biggest parrots, or stipler, says there's a steer in the Tainas Korach. Korach comes along. What Rashi says is kind of anxious. Shalit Tov Benazil. He wants to be the Nossi. He wants to be in charge. On the other hand, he says Kulam Kedoshim, Talis Shekulat Cheles. We can all be the leaders. So what do you want? Do you want to be the leader? Or do you want to be the leader? What's going on here? Says the stipler, when a person gets involved in the machlokes, you lose sight of what the whole machlokes is about. It starts off about you being the Nossi and why was the Nossi? I should be the Nossi. It got derailed into a machlokes. Kulam Kedoshim. One minute, but that wasn't what you're arguing about. It doesn't matter. As long as I'm arguing, it doesn't really matter if that's the point of the argument or not. So, Makas Safadeya, what happened? Because I'll tell us, there was one Safadeya, yeah, and they tried to kill it, kept hitting it, and that multiplied to more and more frogs. more Tzfadim. So why did you stop hitting it? So it's because when you're fighting, you can't just stop hitting. It makes sense. Just stop hitting and the whole thing will go away. So obviously, it's easier always to talk about somebody else. And it's always easier to say, yeah, for Shteitzach, when he's doing it, you can see it by Yenna, that he doesn't stop the argument. What's he gaining out of it? He's just causing more damage. Just stop arguing and leave the whole thing. The whole thing will settle down, and everyone will be happy. Less damage will be done. But obviously, that's the limit that we have to take out from one of the limits we have to take out from the Pasha. Try and apply it to our own lives. And when it does become relevant to us, be able to chop it before more damage is done. Shkoyach, thank you very much.
Ah, the student, after my name.